Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Receiving this message.
We are Ken Jennings and John Roderick. We speak to you from our present, which we can only assume is your distant past, the turbulent time that was the early 21st century.
Fearing the great cataclysm that will surely befall our civilization, we began this monumental reference of strange and obscure human knowledge. These recordings represent our attempt to compile and preserve wonders and esoterica that would otherwise be lost.
So, whether you're listening from an advanced civilization or have just reinvented the technology to decrypt our transmissions, this is our legacy to you.
This is our time capsule. This is the Omnibus.
You have accessed entry 650.SS0117, certificate number 13181, the Integratron.
I really should not be in charge of the Integratron.
Do you mean you should not be in charge of the Integratron episode of Omnibus, or you should not be put in charge of the Integratron Tron itself?
I mean, both things, really. I don't think I should be the curator for the Integratron.
Okay.
I just don't have the time. I don't want to move to Joshua Tree.
No.
But also, I shouldn't be in charge of this entry, because it's about, I mean, it's about mid-century modern design. It's about UFOs. Mm-hmm. It's about weird graffiti culture of the southwestern desert. These are all very...
Woo girls.
It's about, yeah, it's about new age.
Woo moms.
It's about new age moms. It's very Roderick coded, right?
It is. And, you know, Joshua Tree is too. I've watched The Best Minds of My Generation,
wander into the desert.
Yeah, start selling used Levi's, but also buying weird cinder block ruins in Joshua Tree and converting them into, I guess, habitable ruins.
One of the Jeopardy writer researcher guys like lives out there and commutes.
Oh yeah,
to the west side. I'm like, really? That's kind of a drive.
What's crazy is that Joshua Tree used to seem like the moon to Los Angeles, and then
that's the impression I got from the cover of the U2 album. Like, well, you were really like,
way
wow,
out
these guys are in the middle of, they've really found the American wilderness.
But then Los Angelinos realized it's really not that far. And then there was just this steady sort of slow colonization of it. And then I think during the pandemic, people in LA were like, why am I living here? I could be wearing a 10-gallon hat with the 5 gallons flat and jade jewelry and vintage cowboy boots and just live in Joshua Tree.
At what point does it just feel like West Covina out there?
If you talk to people who have lived in Joshua Tree for more than 10 years,
that ship has sailed.
It feels like that now. But if you go to Joshua Tree, you realize, no, it's still, there are so many wing nuts out here still, so many.
Well, plus you can feel all the Lee lines and you can feel all the geomagnetic vortices.
Oh, wow.
So even if it becomes full of Thai takeout.
I didn't know that we were going to talk about vortices so early in the show.
We're really going to talk about nothing but vortices.
Wow. I once had a conversation with a guy who was, we were standing in a field as people were wont to do.
I now think you brought this on yourself.
And he said,
you didn't have to be in a field.
I didn't. He was a Basque guy who used to dye his eyelashes.
this is not a story. This is a Mad Libs.
Named Frank Etchani. But his name started with an X because he was Basque. Mm. And Frank said, can you see the vortices? And I said, what do you mean? And he was like,
I don't even see a single vortice.
He said, look, we're standing at a place where the vortices are crossing. That's why, and then he proceeded to explain why we were feeling some amount of what we were feeling. And I was like, I'm pretty sure what I'm feeling is allergies. And he said, no, we're on, you can see the XY lines are, I didn't understand what he was saying.
Well, I have a series of experiences of not feeling what the other guy was feeling. You know, like every time I try something like this, if I try just a float tank on a whim or something, I mean, I've never tried ayahuasca. Maybe that's when I would finally start feeling what everybody else was feeling.
I think if you tried ayahuasca, you would feel something.
Most people do, right?
I don't think you would be like, I don't know.
I guess it doesn't work on me, like Ambien. That's a new kind of guy. Psychoactive drugs don't work on me.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. I just watched two episodes of Bosch and went to bed.
I guess I feel something. Am I feeling it? Everybody else is vomiting in a hat.
Yeah, I metabolize peyote somehow, it turns out.
Wow, okay, crazy.
No, so I have had that same experience. Like, I just have not, something's different about my mind, or I needed to prepare myself, or I'm just maybe willing to be more suggestible, like your Basque friend. Oh, yeah, this must be it.
Yeah, yeah, right. Does aspirin work on you?
Is it aspirin?
Aspirin, not Basprin.
Did I say Basprin?
I'm not sure. I thought I did. I thought I said Basprin.
Is that when Basque people have a headache? They take Basprin?
Right.
I think it does, but how much of any drug is placebo, you know? I've lived my whole life assuming that if I had a headache, I could take an aspirin.
Right.
Maybe now is the moment you're going to talk me out of it.
Nope, I'm not anti-aspirin. I'm not an aspirin truther.
They used to say take one a day just in case, and now they're like, just kidding, don't take one a day.
But that was for heart attacks. You're supposed to take a baby aspirin. Baby aspirin.
Is it?
They're tiny. They're little aspirins for babies.
I see the dosage is less.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember one side is pink and tastes like a baby.
There you go.
And right? Bare baby. And one side is white and tastes gross.
I think so.
So you just have to put it on your tongue with the baby side down.
That might be it. My dad took baby aspirin every day for 30 years.
And he's
still dead.
I mean, that's what
didn't help.
I think that's what the FDA later discovered. Like, actually don't take aspirin.
Oh.
Why are we talking about this? Oh right!
Like, boy, you did. That should be the tagline of Omnibus as a enterprise.
Omnibus : Why are we talking about this? I mean, why are we talking about the Integratron in the first place? Much less whether baby aspirin is different colors on the other side. But some people are susceptible to feeling, as you say, these feelings.
The energies. The powerful energies.
They know which crystals make the energies more or less, or different mm-hmm. colors,
mm-hmm.
different wavelengths.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all connected to things we have done on Omnibus before. Whatever, those graffitied slabs in the Southwest mm-hmm. that created their own itinerant culture, those Chicago weirdos that had aliens telepathically telling them secrets.
Those are marvelous people. So I remember that episode so fondly.
All the best people.
Yeah. It crosses. It's somewhere between a religion and a pseudoscience and a folk art and what? I mean, what are the other elements?
That's what I learned when we were studying that studying. Like we're in a little study club now.
When you and I were studying. What were we studying?
Those Chicago suburbanites that thought the mothership was coming. It really did not feel like I expected a UFO cult to feel. It just felt like they were Victorian spiritualists, like they were seance people that had replaced grandma with a guy from Neptune.
Right.
Right? Like they were hearing thoughts in their heads, and they were getting messages, and they, you know, a cult leader would have to pass on the messages that he was getting to the other people, and they would all get together and turn out the lights and hold hands and think about the aliens. It's all just, it's a Cold War version of spiritualism if you feel like the seance stuff hasn't held up. It's been discredited somehow.
Yeah, I mean, it's Pentecostalism.
You're speaking in tongues, but the language is from Mars.
From Venus, right.
That's exactly right. In this case, it is exactly from Venus, although... the Venusian in our story speaks perfect English.
Well,
that's what you want in an alien visitor.
The thing is, of all the Venusians, the ones that are able to talk to us are probably going to be the smart ones who have taken an English class.
Well, except that's not true of Americans. The ones that go overseas are not the ones that have learned the local language to fluency.
Oh, that's true. So you're saying there could be rich Venusians that are kind of dumb?
They should just come here and just talk Venusian really loud to us. Klombok talk. Klombok talk.
Or just come down here and wear like a sweatshirt from the Venusian University.
They've got cargo pants.
Yeah, North Venusian U. You're like, that doesn't matter here.
So
have you been to Joshua Tree?
I've been out to the Mojave, but I've never been to the Integratron area itself. Mm-hmm. And you, I believe, actually have. I don't know. Yes. Maybe I shouldn't give it away early.
No, we'll get there.
We have friends who speak lovingly about their visits to the Integratron. And I started reading about it, and it was so much better than I thought. It still did not make me want to go there, I gotta say.
Really?
Well, I mean, I'll do anything once.
but not ayahuasca.
Except for
presumably.
Ayahuasca.
Presumably.
Just like that Meatloaf song. Like, I'll do anything once, but not ayahuasca, presumably. This story begins with a man named George Van Tassel, which is a really good UFO contactee name.
George Van Tassel.
Like, that's what you expect in Project Blue Book. George Van Tassel later called the authorities and told the Air Force. our man was born in the Cleveland area in 1910. At some point, very young, like in his high school age, he started hanging out at a local ruralish airport.
Where?
Let's see. Jefferson, Ohio.
Okay.
I think it's like 50 miles outside of Cleveland. So it's not your mom's part of Ohio.
No.
Not your father's Oldsmobile.
No. That's over there. That's what we call Cleveland, Ohio.
This is up in the top part of mm-hmm. Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
It's what is it? It's round on both ends and high in the middle.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Do you know the riddle about Ohio?
What's round in both ends and high in the middle?
Ohio. Oh.
High. Oh.
But if you look on the map, it's actually pointy on both ends and kind of round in the middle. So
round, but like the other kind of round.
The bad kind of. The negative. Dewlap. The negative space of round. Lake Erie is sagging into it. I don't know. Does this happen in Alaska? A high schooler like goes to the airport and just falls in with an airport crowd and that becomes their life? Rural airport life?
Yeah, for sure. I almost did.
You dodged a bullet.
Yeah. You know, Merrill Field is right in the heart of Anchorage and it's one of the busiest small plane airports in the world. And it was, what was it? Less than a mile from my dad's house. And we had a plane there.
You just go hang out.
There was a Civil Air Patrol squadron headquartered there. I'd go to that airport. I might still be there if I applied for a job pumping gas at the airport at the Merrill Field, one of the Merrill Field gas stations, and
failed the drug test.
And the guy was like, "You're 14. You can't pump gas here until you're 16."
Even in Alaska.
Yeah, and I think it was the 80s. They had these new laws.
Yeah,
and And I applied, I think, the next year. And he was like, you know, you can sell candy bars or whatever. And I was like, that's not enough for me. I want to have that airplane energy. And then by 16, I was trying to work in television.
Too late. You missed your airport calling.
But if he'd given me that job, I might still be working there.
Well, if you tried it in the 20s, like George Van Tassel did, you can just be a high school kid pumping gas at the airport, which is exactly what he did. He got a job.
So fun.
He had a pilot's license by the time he graduated from high school.
I mean,
who didn't? Just like every kid in Alaska.
Yeah.
But maybe not in.
Not every kid.
Not outside Cleveland in the 20s, right? Like.
A lot fewer airplanes then.
And a real, I guess in the 20s, it would have been a real futurist thing to do. You know, like that's. Today it seems kind of quaint and old timey to hang out at a rural airport. But back then, you know, that was the equivalent of a space station.
Yeah, right.
That was the new thing. And so he's a pilot, he's a mechanic. And by the time he's a grown guy, he's gone out to California, where the aerospace industry is booming, of course, you know, before, during, and after the war. And he becomes an aviation engineer, or at least that's how he's described in a lot of, in what's written about him.
Is he an engineer?
Yeah, you'd think a degree would be part of being an aviation engineer.
Yeah.
He appears to be an engineer by virtue of the fact that he works at Douglas Hughes and Lockheed.
Okay.
But again, no evidence of him having an engineering degree.
Kind of like my great-grandfather was a judge.
Oh, is that different back then? You could just...
My great-grandfather was a judge, I think because he was a justice of the peace somewhere on the Oregon Trail. And then he got to Seattle and nobody could tell whether he was or not. But he never went to college, I don't think.
He's not like some evil judge from Blood Meridian.
No, but they for sure called him judge here and treated him like a judge, but I don't see any, having searched, I have not found any evidence that he's a that he was a
just the Wells Fargo wagon brought him a gavel and
so
he was good to. It's like today you can perform weddings just if you join the Church of the Omniversal Life Truth.
Yeah, that's me. I can
send them $650.
I've done 15 weddings in my life.
15?
Yeah, and three of them are still married.
Is that are those
three
the real numbers?
People are still married.
Are those the real numbers?
Yeah, 15, and I used to marry people at the Comet Tavern.
It's like you have a chart where you got one of those wands and you're sliding things back and forth. Oh, divorced. Thunk, click.
I married the bass player of Death Cab for Cutie to his first wife. That's not one of the ones that survived.
That sentence was better until you said to his first wife.
First wife.
Yeah. I married the bassist of Death Cab for Cutie. Oh, you guys are such a nice couple.
I'm the boy.
That's not okay anymore. Not okay anymore.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
As you and I both know, we've been talking about Mint Mobile now for a long time. But with Mint Mobile, you get like a full cell phone service without the kind of typical cell phone shenanigans of extra charges and weird outages and all the things that make cell phone plans like so strangely expensive and with all these extra fees. It's a super simple, incredibly inexpensive, unlimited premium wireless service. And as far as I can tell, like all the kids in my daughter's cadre almost exclusively are using Mint Mobile. And as you know, there's nobody that's more fastidious about their internet service and cell phone service than teens, right? Although they have their parents are probably making the choice to be on Mint Mobile. The teens are very, very conscious of their technology. And Mint Mobile provides unlimited talk and text, high-speed data, the nation's largest 5G network, and you can bring your own phone, bring your own phone number, all your existing contacts from whatever program you were on before. And right now, you can get 3 months of unlimited service from Mint Mobile for $15 a month. When I get my own phone bill, the discrepancy between the charges that I'm paying and the $15 a month of Mint Mobile in this 3 month plan is just, it's just mind boggling. So this year, and I guess we're coming up on a new school year, but for all of us this year, we should skip the breaking a sweat and breaking the bank that we typically do with our cell phone stuff and get this new customer offer. 3 months of unlimited wireless for just $15 a month at mintmobile.com/omnibus. That's mintmobile.com/omnibus. Be sure to put that /omnibus on the end for your 3 months at $15 a month. That's an upfront payment of $45, which is the $15 a month. And it's limited to new customers and for the first 3 months only. Speeds may slow above 35 gigabytes on an unlimited plan. And taxes and fees, of course, are extra. But go to Mint Mobile for details. And again, that's mintmobile.com/omnibus.
So he doesn't appear to be an engineer, except in, magazine articles about him. Mm-hmm. I think his official title was maybe flight safety inspector. Mm-hmm. Like, so he may have just been a guy running through a checklist when a plane came off the line. Or he also told people he was Howard Hughes's personal test pilot.
Oh, so he's a liar and a kook.
Right. Well, a liar or a kook. I mean, maybe if he's a kook, maybe he believes he's okay. Howard Hughes' test pilot. I don't know.
Okay.
But yes, he seems to like many eccentrics that we discuss on Omnibus, his resume is a little up in question. Mm-hmm. In 1947, he's only in his late 30s. He quits and moves to the Mojave Desert because he has fallen under the spell of a giant rock, which is called Giant Rock.
I thought you were going to say fallen under the spell of a beautiful woman, fallen under the spell of
the desert sunsets.
The night sky. But no, it's a giant rock called Giant Rock.
Giant, capital G, capital R. And it's a pretty good rock. Like, mm-hmm. I don't want to put down Giant Rock. Some sources say that it is the world's biggest freestanding boulder. Other sources point out that there are clearly larger ones in many other places. But why should we? So let's teach the controversy, you know? Like, is it or is it not the world's largest boulder? Who can say?
It does feel like...
It does call itself the world's largest boulder.
Giant Rock.
It is 7 stories tall. 30,000 tons, covers 5,800 square feet.
How have I never seen Giant Rock? It feels like a thing I should have visited. I've been out there a million times.
It is a very big rock.
By Landers.
And it doesn't look like, so he moves to Landers, California, which is kind of a nothing town in the middle of nowhere. No offense to the Landersians listening.
You know, I might have, I don't think I've seen Giant Rock, and now I'm mad.
You missed it when you went through the Amargosa Opera House or the Borax Mines.
Well, this isn't that high up. This is kind of down in them.
It's about 40 miles north of Palm Springs.
But when I was visiting the slab, I mean, Pioneer Town, 29 Palms. I've been all around there.
Landers is tiny, and you really have, just looking at a map, it looks like you really have to want to get there. It's not an easy place to pass through. But Giant Rock is pretty good. You know, it's not clear what it's doing there. Is it some kind of erratic from the Ice Age? It's an odd place for it. If so, could it be some kind of eroded cap of some kind of igneous extrusion? Various theories. But it's big enough and unusual enough that it's a local landmark, I guess. And the reason why Van Tassel quit his job in his 30s and moved his wife and 3 daughters out to Landers, California, is because of a chance meeting he had in the 30s while he was pumping gas at his, I think, uncle's station in L.A. This maybe does not, you know, it goes with the idea that he has checkered his resume a bit, because when he came out to California, it was not to be a, quote, aviation engineer. His uncle had a service station. He gave him a job fixing and, putting the oil, filling up the oil in Packards. And one day he struck up an acquaintance with a Mr. Frank Kritzer, who had come through the station. Frank Kritzer was a prospector.
Yep.
But not that kind. Like, try again.
What kind of prospector was he?
No, try a different kind of prospector.
Oh, let's see. Are there different kinds of prospectors?
He's just not all that Walter Brennan-y. He's just a weirdo that wants to be in the desert.
Oh, God, I know 1,000 of those.
Right. But back then, today we have many names for them. Back then you would just say, yeah, he's a prospector.
But he's not looking for gold. He doesn't have a donkey. He's not wearing a straw hat.
On some level, his stated plan is mineralogical.
Okay.
Like he wants Van Tassel and another friend to stake him because he's got an idea. And if he ever were to find uranium or copper or whatever's out there, he would certainly... pay them back.
Yeah. Oh, good.
Oh, you know, if that you were
makes
worried.
Sense. Where do I put my money?
But he would also, he was clearly just an, like kind of a popular science kind of eccentric. So not Walter Brennan with a donkey. Like he would be telling them about these novel formulas for plastic he'd come up with that the world was not yet ready for.
He's a
crackpot.
Yeah. He's a cocktail napkin physicist.
Exactly. He's a, quote, aviation engineer himself.
Yeah,
probably.
Okay, good.
And his plan was not just to go out to Landers and not just to go out to Giant Rock, but to live under Giant Rock. He brings out enough dynamite to hollow out a 25 by 35 foot bunker? This is hobby digging. This is every omnibus in one. He hobby digs himself a little home under Giant Rock.
This is at a time in life when if you found a giant rock and no one was guarding it, you could just say, I'm going to live under the giant rock.
Live under it.
People are like, eh.
This story is a succession of people discovering that there was a time in American history you could just live under a rock. And he drags a bunch of timber. So he starts spending more and more time out there. Really loves it. He starts dragging like scrap metal and timber behind his car to the degree that he can like kind of... mark off a runway, an airplane runway in a nearby lake bed, because I guess just like his new friend Van Tassel, he is also a, a futurist aviation lover.
You know, what's crazy about that area is that although Giant Rock may be the biggest rock, there are a lot of much smaller rocks that are still too big to land an airplane on them, right? Like,
well, there's
to clear most, that desert. Yeah.
There's very few rocks you would want to land an airplane.
No, that's right.
What's the biggest size you'd want to land an airplane on? A softball?
No, even that, you wouldn't want to land an airplane on it. No,
ping-pong ball?
No, pebbles. You won't just want
to. So what you're saying is this area has a lot of rocks that are bigger than pebbles.
Yeah.
That's fascinating stuff.
and they're all over, and I just feel like, you know, they do have a lot of, like, those Mojave Desert airports
yes.
that they land UFOs on, but those are like sand. They're not like rock.
Well, this was a dry lake bed, so what does that mean?
Oh, okay,
is it possible that it is clear enough?
Or, that's what they like.
He's got a spot near Giant Rock where you can land a plane, and it's not an airport until he just drags in scrap metal and marks off an airport. He also is very interested in setting up a bunch of radio antennas. And his name is Kritzer. He was, I think, born and raised in West Virginia. He's an American citizen.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're a guy with a kind of a German-sounding last name out in the desert setting up landing strips and radio antennas in the time leading up to World War II and during the war, after Pearl Harbor especially, you can get into trouble.
Yeah, it doesn't seem... Like, if you were trying to communicate with the Germans or the Japanese, it doesn't seem like that.
Joshua
like,
Tree is the word. Yeah, is the place not, to go.
But at the same time, right? The FBI is designed to look at kooks like that and find a problem with them.
That's what happens. He keeps local legend circulates, local gossip circulates that he's up to no good, that he's actually a German immigrant. He gets dragged in for questioning multiple times.
Remember a time when we persecuted German immigrants?
Let's get back to that. like anybody with a monocle, I think, should be fair game.
Mm-hmm.
And sadly, his time in the desert ends badly. In 1942, apparently there have been local rumors of stuff going missing, radio equipment and scrap metal is going missing, and a sheriff's deputies show up at Giant Rock to question Mr. Kritzer about it. His address is 1 Giant Rock, Landers, California. But this story stops being funny very quickly. The circumstances are a little contested, but a lot of dynamite goes off.
Oh.
Throwing the deputies like across the bunker, out the door of the bunker, back into their cars. Killing.
Oh, and then their cars go backwards and they're back in their homes.
Luckily, there's lots of rocks around there. So they hit a rock and it stops them. Kritzer is killed by the explosion. It's really hard to believe that they were going to arrest him. And he apparently,
dynamited
Ruby Ridge. Yeah.
Golly.
The whole thing. And once they found out that, once he died, they did an inventory of his underground hobby dug bunker and found out that there were 217 more pounds of dynamite inside that could have gone up. 217 pounds of dynamite.
That would have sent Giant Rock straight up.
Giant Rock would have been several rocks after. It's now several medium-sized rocks. So Frank Kritzer is dead, and his bunker is empty. And George Van Tassel, one of his two gas station buddies, who I guess were really hoping he would find uranium or some kind of scientific secret out there, decides to follow in his footsteps and moves out to Landers. He contacts, this is now the 40s, this is after the war. He contacts the BLM and is able to lease the land and reopen the airport. And his wife actually starts up a cafe called the Come On Inn in hopes that traffic and passersby will materialize.
Uh-huh.
And for some sense of what kind of passersby the Van Tassels are expecting, when he reopens the airport, he calls it the Giant Rock Interplanetary Airport.
Right.
This is now the 40s, and the Southwest is where aliens go.
Right.
Roswell era. People are, this is at the same time frame as the Chicago guys. In the time frame after the war, people are seeing lights in the sky. Many of them are contactees. They've had conversations with these visitors. They've let them ride in their saucers. The media is full of such accounts, many such cases. And it does seem to be, talking about the mysticism that bleeds into flying saucer fever. Before he started talking about aliens, Van Tassel just talked about the spirits out in the desert. He wanted to go live under giant rock and talk to the Native American spirits of the past. You know, there would be, it was like a shamanic thing.
Oh.
Shamanic. Isn't that where Lord of the Rings surely worked? Yeah. It's shamanic. I've never had to say that word. What do you think?
Shamanic.
They all sound like just Ellis Island last names. Mm-hmm. The shamanics. They live in the. It's like some everybody in the Lower East Side tenement is named Shamanic. And at some point, his visitors in his own personal mythology go from being Indian spirits of the desert to being visitors from other planets.
Now, was it? This is something I often kind of want to ask.
Me?
You.
Something you want to ask me?
Which is, when you have that conversion experience, when you're like, I am listening to the voices of our long dead ancestors, and then you say, I am listening to voices from Venus, do you...
What a coincidence.
Well, yeah. Do you retcon it so that it was always voices from Venus that you mistook for native voices? Or ancestral voices, or is it that you had the one and then they introduced you, like your dead ancestors, like, you know who you should talk to? The Venusians.
Well, that happened to a lot of those, like the theosophists who were also talking to aliens. It was like, yeah, I've crossed the borders into the higher spheres. This goes back to, what's his name? Swedenborg, you know, like the heavens are the heavens. You know, God and Jesus and all our beloved dead are up there, but so are Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune. Like, what... Wouldn't those realms be full of little blue guys as well? So those things have been conflated, I think, for a long time.
Yeah, once you're listening at the higher frequency, then everybody's on that channel.
You're assuming that God and the Indian coyote spirits and the little green men are three different people, and maybe they're not.
It's a trinity.
Maybe they're all, that's right, that's my trinity.
Little green men.
Father, son, and alien gray guy with big eyes. I mean, it's hard to know here because he does stop talking about his spiritual journeying and start talking about the visitors from Venus.
Yeah.
But that's because at this time he has society and followers.
Right.
So who knows what's going on in his head and how much the narrative he tells them affects what he remembers. But aliens are coming to him in the night. And it's the same, you know, this is what medieval mystics would say about, you know, the angels that visited them by night. And it's probably what the ancient Greeks would have said about the gods who came to visit them at night. You know, it's, and up to Joseph Smith, you know, there's this tradition of angels and spirits coming to me. And then after post enlightenment, sometime in the, you know, in the 20th century, it becomes
radio waves,
space invaders.
I mean, Edwards Air Force Base is not far, and Edwards was like, right after the war, where they started
doing the flights.
Yeah, they started doing all these kinds of crazy secret.
They're probably testing secret weather balloons.
Weather balloons. It's always weather balloons.
It's because there were weather balloons, I think.
Well, that's what they want you to think.
That's what they say now.
Right.
I don't know. Do you think they were covering up flying saucers and they were like, those were.
Are you asking me if I think flying saucers are real? This is the moment. Well,
I think it's more likely that the government actually did have weather balloons.
Yeah.
Than that people were seeing real flying saucers and the government had to invent the idea of weather balloons to cover for it.
No, there are definitely weather balloons.
Yeah, weather balloons just seems like a real obvious thing that you would see.
Yes.
And be confused by.
Well, that's the question.
You and I would not be confused by a weather balloon. We would say, look, a weather balloon.
Yeah, but when people are like, I saw lights flashing across the sky at 100 miles an hour, and the Air Force is like, it was a weather balloon.
That was Venus.
It's like, well, yeah, exactly. You saw a reflection of Venus in your, and the pilot's like, I don't know. I've 10,000 hours of flight time, and I feel like I wouldn't recognize, like,
except, you know, I've read some of these accounts firsthand. And like I just last week, I was reading about when Arthur Clarke and Stanley Kubrick were writing 2001 together. One of the things that brought them together is Kubrick asked Clarke, hey, what kind of telescope should I get? And Clarke was like, oh boy, let's like become telescope nerds. So they're up on the roof of, you know, whatever apartment Kubrick was renting in Manhattan. He was already living in the UK. And they see a UFO. And they can't account for how it's moving or how bright it is. It's impossible. And then I think, you know, Clark, a rationalist, is able to make some phone calls and find out, no, it really was
just a spot on the lens.
I think it was like, you know, some early satellite passing over. But they were like, but it can't be, because look, it's making all these weird arcs. A satellite can't do that. We've discovered something. And then they confirm, no, it is the satellite. There was just some illusion. Even Arthur C. Clarke can look at a satellite he knows is there and get taken in by its apparent flying saucer-like behavior. And that's a very telling story to me, because if that guy can do that, think about some yo-yo in a small plane.
I'm generally an Occam's razor guy. Like, simplest explanation is the best.
Except with UFOs.
But and also feel that way about UFOs. But there was in Alaska in the 80s, there was a UFO moment where it did us a great disservice, because it was a Korean Airlines flight that was flying from New York to Seoul. And it was going to land in Anchorage on its way.
Right.
And in the middle of the night, they encountered this. They encountered this UFO that the pilot, like, gave a lengthy description of. They saw it for an hour or whatever. You know, there was just this long contact with this giant craft. And when the Anchorage Daily News arrived on everyone's doorstep in the morning, they had done a really pretty good illustration of what the pilot described, but it was the description of it as an illustration was below the fold. So when you looked at the paper on the step, it said,
UFO
sighted by the, and then here's this, what looked like a picture. And I think the whole city spent that first like 30 seconds of the day, every single person completely freaked out. And it did something to me. At 15 years old, I saw this newspaper headline without the explanation that this was an artist surrendering. And I've never been able to shake the feeling of hair standing on end.
This is the earliest case of that internet era thing of people only reading the headlines of something and becoming radicalized when they just should have read the whole story.
Well, and the incredible disappointment when you then opened the paper and realized it wasn't a photo and you were like, oh man,
Were there a bunch of sightings? Because these UFO waves are kind of hysterias, right?
Well, this was one of the classic ones where it was on the radar screens of some people and not on others. It was sighted by more than, you know, one person. And then the official explanation was that this pilot with 10,000 hours was just seeing the reflection of his own instruments in the windshield, which he was like, what are you talking about? I know the difference. And then the next day he recanted and was just like, oh no, never mind.
They got to him.
And all of this,
the guys in suits showed up.
It was just one cup of lighter fluid after another on whatever you wanted, whatever internet or pre-internet, whatever conspiracy you wanted to latch onto. But no, otherwise I don't believe that the aliens live among us.
But just that one case.
In that one case, there was a super ship.
There was one alien visitor.
Super ship that came to Fairbanks.
Came to your hometown, but all the others that did not go to your hometown are fake.
The rest of it's BS, but there was one enormous ship hovering over Eielson Air Force Base in the middle of the night.
Let me tell you about one other visitor. Okay. On August 24th, 1953, George Van Tassel is visited by the captain of a scout ship from Venus.
Visited personally, yes. Like knocked on the door.
Comes to him in the night. It's a
vision.
Seems to be the equivalent of a vision. Okay. Although he does describe kind of material things about the guy. He's wearing like a gray one-piece bodysuit. He speaks perfect English.
With what accent?
He says he sounds like Ronald Coleman.
Okay. Okay.
So it would be a transatlantic 40s, 50s, you know, very...
hey there, pal. Hey, Pally.
Cultured movie star. No, a little more like this. The clipped almost received pronunciation tones of Mr. Ronald Cole.
Oh, hello.
So imagine a Venusian guy who talks like actor George Sanders or something. His name is Sol Ganda.
I like it.
He is 700 years old.
Sure.
But doesn't look a day over 28. He just looks like a normal earthling male.
But he measures his life in earth years.
Yeah, I wonder if that's 700 Venusian.
Yeah, how many years is a Venusian year?
1 year it might on be Venus 60,
65.
Is 225 days. So it would still be impressive. Even a 700-year-old Venusian is around 500.
Okay.
Of our years. So, you know, less impressive.
But still
pretty good.
Yeah.
And he's landed his ship there, and he brings George on board the ship, lets him.
Oh, so it's not a vision. He's actually like, he's.
Well, he has come to him in the night, but yes, he does have a ride.
Oh, okay, cool.
So Van Tassel gets to see the ship, gets to go for a ride on the ship. So Ganda brings a message that Earth is, building too many things. And this is one thing you're always worried about.
Can't with our confirm. Planet.
Building too many things out of metal.
Oh.
It's disrupting Venusian telepathy.
Oh. Whoa.
But you always, this is the kind of NIMBY crap you always hear about when a skyscraper goes up.
Ah, it's another thing. It's disrupting Venusian telepathy.
Look at these girders.
You know, this house is not built of metal. Your house also not built of metal.
Correct.
So it's just, what we're talking about now is late stage capitalism.
That's right. Well, it's high rises.
Yeah, the simple folk aren't doing this.
Well, except that we're also good urbanists we want taller buildings, which presumably would have more metal in them.
That's right. We are good urbanists.
And it makes us good urbanists, but it makes us bad on Venusian thought transfer issues.
Now, is this just disrupting thought transfer on Venus, or are the Venusians using this telepathy solar system wide?
It seems to go through the ether of space. He says, like, all this metal you're using is bad news. It's disrupting all our radio frequencies, and that includes our thought transfers, because, you know, these are men of science. They know that telepathy is not magic. It goes through radio waves, anything else. So he comes with a message to please stop building so many things with metal. And along the lines of that, he has brought the formula for the building of a fantastic device, presumably of non-metallic materials.
Oh, he's like, here's what I'm going to give you in trade.
Yeah, and if you're connecting the dots, maybe this is related to the metal stuff. It's like, you don't need all these girders. What you need is this amazing machine. It's a device that somehow uses electrostatic force, like some kind of a charge. And the power of that will produce, three amazing effects. Number one, it can counter gravity. It's an anti-gravity generator.
Cool.
Number two, it can extend life. It's a rejuvenation machine.
Super cool.
And number three, as you've probably guessed, it will do time travel.
I was not prepared for that. That's the coolest one of all.
If you just build this thing according to Salganda's schematics.
You can hover and live for 700 years and travel through time.
Yeah, you can hover and you'll have like just rock hard abs. You'll be getting younger.
Word.
And you can take both those things to the French Revolution.
Awesome.
You can hover and look young and hot in any time period of your choice.
Wow.
If you could hover and look hot, really in any time or place. Do you have you thought about this a lot?
Boy.
Do you think like Lincoln assassination?
No.
Napoleonic Wars?
No.
Birth of Christ.
Jeez, I feel like maybe Mutiny on the Bounty.
Boy, that mutiny would have gone differently if one guy had been hovering and looking really, really fit.
Yeah, maybe Captain Cook's encounter with the Hawaiians. I feel like I could have changed a lot about that.
Yeah, colonialism would have been even worse.
There was
if Captain Cook had one hovering guy. Or do you feel like you're going to be on the side of the Polynesians?
Well, I wouldn't take sides. I would both sides that as I do everything. I'd be like, listen.
You would broker an agreement.
Yeah, it just feels like that was a bad deal for everybody.
They'd both be like, let's listen to the floating hot guy.
Exactly. Like, look, if you kill Cook, it's not going to keep them from coming. It's just going to make them mad. And then to Cook, I'd be like, you know, shouldn't London's nice this time of year.
One floating hot guy would really change a lot of historical meetings.
A lot, right?
It's kind of, I guess it's the premise of the of Watchmen, that if America just has one floating naked man.
The blue man, naked blue man.
If you have one floating naked specimen, it'll change the course of history.
But here's the problem. Naked blue man gets bored.
That's true.
Because if you are floating eternal naked blue man, then what's new? Well, you don't care.
It would be you though. So you'd have all your, you'd still have all your eccentricities and hobbies.
Oh, that's true. That's true. It would be me, not Zhivago or whoever he is.
Yeah, it's Dr. Zhivago, I think. It's a big cinematic universe.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
As you and I both know, we've been talking about Mint Mobile now for a long time. But with Mint Mobile, you get like a full cell phone service without the kind of typical cell phone shenanigans of extra charges and weird outages and all the things that make cell phone plans like so strangely expensive, and with all these extra fees. It's a super simple, incredibly inexpensive, unlimited premium wireless service. And as far as I can tell, like all the kids in my daughter's cadre almost exclusively are using Mint Mobile. And as you know, there's nobody that's more fastidious about their internet service and cell phone service than teens, right? Although they have their parents are probably making the choice to be on Mint Mobile. The teens are very, very conscious of their technology. And Mint Mobile provides unlimited talk and text, high-speed data, the nation's largest 5G network, and you can bring your own phone, bring your own phone number, all your existing contacts from whatever program you were on before. And right now, you can get 3 months of unlimited service from Mint Mobile for $15 a month. When I get my own phone bill, the discrepancy between the charges that I'm paying and the $15 a month of Mint Mobile in this 3 month plan is just, it's just mind boggling. So this year, and I guess we're coming up on a new school year, but for all of us this year, we should skip the breaking a sweat and breaking the bank that we typically do with our cell phone stuff and get this new customer offer. 3 months of unlimited wireless for just $15 a month at mintmobile.com/omnibus. That's mintmobile.com/omnibus. Be sure to put that slash omnibus on the end for your 3 months at $15 a month. That's an upfront payment of $45, which is the $15 a month. And it's limited to new customers and for the first 3 months only. Speeds may slow above 35 gigabytes on an unlimited plan. And taxes and fees, of course, are extra. But go to Mint Mobile for details. And again, that's mintmobile.com/omnibus.
Now, you know, as Van Tassel tells this story, you would expect it to be a big surprise that a Venusian had showed up on his doorstep and shown him all this technology. In fact, it's a little less of a of an overnight conversion, because the historical record shows that Van Tassel had been holding UFO meetings for years.
Whoa.
In the bunker under Giant Rock. That had become a mecca for UFO buffs, people who had claimed their own encounters, contactees.
How big is the bunker under the Giant Rock?
I gave an approximation before based on my
your exposure to other bunkers.
It's like 25 by 45 feet or something like that.
A big bunker under a giant rock. Of all the places to build a big bunker, it seems like...
Well, a lot of people go out in the desert and dig their own little holes, but remember, this guy had 217 pounds of dynamite.
Right.
So he had bunker building tech that some of us don't have access to.
I feel like if you're going to build a big bunker in the desert where there's nothing on the roof, that might collapse the roof.
I see.
or build it in a place where maybe the biggest possible roof collapser that ever was.
Well, if the rock is sufficiently big, you can build a pretty big bunker under it, and you still feel like, oh, I'm just a corner of this rock.
Oh, I see. I see what you're saying.
Because I've seen, you know, the entrance, it's been filled in now, but you can still see where the entrance was kind of heading into and under the rock. And you do start outside and head under the rock.
Right.
But I guess the rock covering as it does 5,800 square feet means like that would be a big house.
5,800 square feet. Wait a minute. How big is your house?
It's smaller than that.
Okay.
It's quite a bit smaller.
There are a lot of houses around here that I bet you are 5,800 square feet. They're vulgar as can be.
I was looking at that house across the street that has the pillars making a little carport, like that guy thinks he's on Downton Abbey.
That's right.
It's an awful house.
Dave, he built that house.
Maybe we shouldn't be doxing Dave, and his awful house.
Dave's like 90 years old and he loves his house, and I support him in all his ways. But it's true, it does look like Monticello.
And I bet it's 5,800 square feet.
I'm sure it is.
So he should not move that to under Giant Rock, or it would immediately be in his living room, Giant Rock.
Giant Rock.
Yes, but this bunker is small enough that Giant Rock stays up above where it's supposed to be.
You know, these days, a lot of the architecture out there would incorporate Giant Rock into the atria of the mid-mod house.
So people have been coming from all over America, have been coming under the Giant Rock and hearing Van Tassel's theories about the galaxy. And it's really no surprise when this starts to escalate and the aliens start giving him technology. But that night when the alien told him to build this machine, he took it seriously.
Well, let's refer to the alien by his Christian name.
Sorry, Salgonda, okay. His government name. Is his Christian name?
I think so.
Is the alien
a
good Christian? He spends almost 20 years building what you and I know as, and what you have seen, the Integratron. On a spot 3 miles south. The Integratron, as you know, having seen it, is a 55-foot diameter circular building with a tall domed top.
Yes, it is.
It's about 38 feet high with the dome. It is kind of blindingly white out in the desert. It's a whitewashed facade. And I don't know if you saw this because you didn't go inside, right?
I have not been, although my sister and her cadre,
I believe this,
and many of my other lady friends who are of a particular jade-wearing culture have all been to it, and they've done things there, and they've seen things there and heard things there.
Now I'm worried we've talked about this on Omnibus. Have we?
No, we I don't not. Think so. But the Integratron,
because, I heard about this when my LA makeup lady was talking about it, because she goes out there.
I've met her. She's marvelous.
She's great. And one of the reasons why she's so spry and fun and amazing is presumably because of these alien energies.
I asked her some questions, and I don't think she's 700 years old. I think she's my age.
She's actually an amazingly youthful and fit, nearly 70, I want to say.
Well, that's close to my age.
you have a 70-year-old soul.
Maybe it's the Integratron that's done it.
That's what I think.
Yeah.
And you and I have LA friends who go out there of a weekend because it's a destination now. But this was not true in his day. One interesting thing about the building is that it's got this whitewashed facade, and the facade is basically what's making it a building. It does not have any nails or screws, I guess, in accordance with Salgonda's
no metal
problems with the thought transfers. No flashing, no weather stripping, really just the white paint and caulk are keeping this dome standing in the middle of the Mojave Desert.
Well, the thing about it, when you see it, it looks kind of like an observatory.
Yes. Not a lot of buildings have that, are small, but with a tall dome.
Like that. And in Alaska, you do see a lot of weird sort of 50s igloos that were built using not ice.
Are they air stations or are they homes?
No, it was a thing where Alaskan guys, certain kinds of bulldozer owners would say, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to build a 4-story tall igloo.
As a primary residence?
Or something. It was just, you know, it was a time when...
It's hobby digging, but in reverse.
Hobby digging, yeah. And so giant igloos out in the middle of nowhere is kind of not, like in Alaska, you do see them. And a lot of them maybe roadside attractions, except no one's ever on that road.
Right.
Kind of like the Integratron.
They do still have attraction. Like if an attraction attracts on a highway and there's nobody there, is it still an attraction?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Still attractive in theory, like in a platonic sense.
But from the outside, the Integratron does not look like what it looks like on the inside, which is something, I mean, I've seen pictures of it on the inside and it seems like, wow, this is miraculous. On the outside, it's not.
Yeah, on the outside, it's like, who put this weird observatory there? But on the inside, it's a little more temple-like because, except for this concrete ring, which I guess is very important for the electrostatic charges of the place and the vortices and whatnot, it's all old-growth Douglas fir from the state of Washington.
Yes.
So you got these amazing ribs and rafters of Washington trees, and it's just a beautiful kind of a clubhouse space.
It feels like a ship almost, except a spaceship.
Ship of the desert.
Yeah. And it's full of like weird, right? Am I wrong that they have all those like,
that's exactly
kind
what's
of sound
coming
bowls and stuff.
That's what it's for today. Okay. A lot of sound there, and that's because of its acoustic, properties.
Was it built with acoustic properties in mind?
I think so. Or maybe it's just an accident of when you build a round building, suddenly you're like, holy crap, like sound is weird in here. It may have just been that because, you know, Van Tassel, I don't think much of his scientific background, but he did build this thing. The lore at the site says that the way he got all this wood, these amazing timbers from Washington Douglas fir, it was a gift from his old boss, Howard Hughes.
Oh, right.
Who would have had access to, you know, weird
whatever he wanted.
Yeah. Well, plus he was building big wooden planes. Why wouldn't he know where to get good rounded boards?
Right. Although is fir the wood that you would use? It's a pretty soft wood for an airplane.
The spruce goose is made of spruce. Or maybe it's not actually. I feel like that's one of those facts where like the spruce goose is actually made of ponderosa pine.
This is the kind of thing that you would know.
I feel
because
like I
somebody's going to come up to you on the street and say, what was the spruce goose made of, Ken?
Laminated birch.
Birch. But birch goose doesn't. So why is it called the spruce goose?
Because nothing rhymes with birch. The birch perch?
The birch perch.
I mean, that's a fish. If he had built a wooden submarine, it would have been the birch perch.
Why is it called the spruce goose?
I think just a reporter.
It was some reporter, of course. Hey, he's like, it's built a spruce goose.
Back then, reporters were not strictly bound by things like facts. And it rhymed, so that's perfect.
Yeah.
In this, as you know, he spent almost 20 years building it. It was going to be the headquarters of the Ministry of Universal Wisdom. And he would have, you know, his UFO meetings would sometimes be held there in addition to under the rock. In 1957, he told Life magazine that the aliens were going to help him run for president.
Sure.
In 1960.
Sure.
Which surely would have changed history.
Sure.
Because he would have beaten Kennedy and Nixon.
It does feel like with alien help. Yeah.
And
Venusian telepathy.
And with Venusian technology, he's not going to get shot in Dallas.
Maybe that's why Kennedy and Nixon were busy building so many high-rises to confound the Venusian attempt to screw with American politics.
In 1960, Kennedy and Nixon kept leaving the campaign trail to build big metal buildings.
You remember them both calling for more metal buildings.
They were like Jimmy Carter in Habitat for Humanity, but they were just up on these girders with a lunch pail, yeah, and one of those rivet things. Yeah. What are those called?
Rivet guns.
There we go.
I feel like doing an omnibus on rivet gun just because I liked the title.
And the sound.
I'm just going to write that down just in case it becomes an incredible episode that we couldn't have found otherwise.
If you want me to do the show about rivet guns so you're free to go the whole time, that's also fun. Yeah, well, I've only seen them in cartoons. Those tick, 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 tick.
Yeah.
You know, cartoons set on a construction site where people are always walking from a girder that's stationary onto a girder that's being lifted. And from there back onto a girder that happens when I sleepwalk all the time.
Happens all the time.
I'm sleepwalking on a girder and I'm about to step into thin air and then somebody lifts a girder into the gap.
You're such a Magoo.
It's so lucky. I've just been protected by the hand of fate. So the Giant Rock Spacecraft Convention happens out here every year, well into the 60s, I think. George Van Tassel sadly passes away in 1978 in Santa Ana. He's 67 years old. The accounts of his death always talk about how suspicious it is that a 67-year-old in good health would have a heart attack. And really, we suspect foul play. But isn't the world full of 67-year-olds having a good day until their heart attack?
We forget how many pork chops they used to eat. We don't eat nearly as many pork chops as he must have eaten in his life.
Yeah, do you think it is at the come on in, his wife has given him a pork chop and a big like slice of apple pie, like a third of a pie? You know how pie used to be bigger?
So much bigger.
Like every night? Probably.
I mean, my mom said that my dad never ate a vegetable that he didn't have to. And yeah, that seems right. I think my dad wanted a pork chop every day if he could get it, and there was nobody there to stop him.
Did I tell the story about Al Michaels? I think I did. That I was eating at this Italian place in Brentwood, and Al Michaels is over in the corner, and the server's like, yep, that's his table. He's here 210 nights a year, legendary sportscaster Al Michaels, and he never eats a vegetable. Like he has been to this restaurant like thousands of times and has never eaten a single vegetable.
Wow.
He's the last surviving guy of that generation.
What a hero. What a hero. Santa Ana's not far from the desert. I mean,
right.
Yeah.
Right. I think he was just visiting friends. But, you know, this is all part of some mythology, because his widow also says that while they were at the funeral, they came home to find that government agents had ransacked his study and taken all his papers.
Oh.
So clearly the men in black did not want word getting out of all his Venusian technology innovation.
They were fine with him having it up until then, but they didn't want it to fall into other hands.
Yeah, weird that they let him have it his whole life.
Sounds like he might have been a government agent.
Who, George Van Tassel?
Well, I'm saying if they were like, oh yeah, he's got all that technology, but he can keep it.
I mean, the last guy was possibly a Nazi agent. Why shouldn't this guy be some kind of a Cold War secret agent? By the way, do you know, like in old accounts of like Venus-centered science fiction, there's some thought that maybe venerian would be the adjective?
Venerian?
Like somebody, like venereal disease means a disease of your romantic, because Venus is a goddess of love and,
right,
and passion. So that's a romance caused by your venereal impulses, your Venus-inspired illness impulses.
Interesting. So, and then we decided venereal had already gotten, yes, a bad association.
Because now I think you hear the word venereal and you think it's some kind of anatomical reference. Yeah, it's related, right, to veins or something.
Yeah.
No, those were the venereals coming down from the other planets.
Yeah, Venusian isn't like any other construction.
That's true.
Of that kind. It does feel a little bit like,
I guess, Malthusian.
I'm here to destroy the earth with my positor accelerator.
We do say Malthusian.
Right.
We don't say Maltharian, but that's because it's not a Greek, it's not a Latin suffix. This is a new boring side trap. Let's get off it.
Okay.
Let's go back.
Here we go. Neither of us know enough to comment intelligently. Moving on.
After Van Tassel's death, his widow inherits the Ministry of Universal Wisdom and its headquarters, the mighty Integratron.
So this is like Paul Allen's sister inheriting the Seattle Seahawks.
Yes. And just like Paul Allen's sister, she's really short on money. And she has to dismantle everything.
Oh, no.
No little computer library for us. Oh. No Cinerama. Not that weird building you were on Dennyway that you were walking by the other day.
Yeah.
No, she lets a series of groups lease it. So a series of the crackpots you would expect.
Good.
Lease the Integratron for various years. Finally, in 1986, she can't maintain the Integratron anymore. She sells it to Emil Canning and Diana Cushing, two people who are very interested in the sonic properties, the acoustic properties of the place. And I think during the Van Tassel era, that had
people
been
recognized
noticed.
It
was a resonant sound tabernacle.
But they were interested in it not as a place to record rock music, but as a place that maintained like sonic connection
they
to the
ethereal. They were like,
we think we can get
the Eagles out here.
Exactly.
Yes, they thought that the sound properties of the place could have healing, mystical, new age effects on the body and mind. And of course they were right, because that did happen.
Sure.
Have you been to a round place that has weird properties, like a whispering gallery in a church or?
For sure. Well,
they're great.
Washington State Capitol has the.
If you go up in the rotunda. Or,
well, it's the rotunda is weird, but there's actually a space kind of right in the entry where. It's like there's a building like this at Cornell I've visited too, where you stand on one side of the room and it's got a coved ceiling and you can stand all the way on the other side of what would be an enormous space and hear people whispering.
There's one point where you can hear each corresponding.
Yeah, if you stand on the black check mark on the ground, you're like, wait a minute, I can hear.
I've done that at St. Paul's. I was in the Maparium. You know, the Christian Scientists built a globe you can go inside in Boston because, of course, they did.
Of course.
And it's frozen in like 1938 or whenever they last did the globe. So it's got Nyasa land and stuff.
Right.
And that's the kind of place where they're like, please do not talk inside the Maparium because like every sound will be super loud.
We'll just keep resonating until your brain explodes.
Until the glass all shatters and the Maparium is no more. And I've seen a show at the Sphere in Vegas, which has...
Was that cool?
Yeah. I mean, acoustically, like it's very... The effects you can kind of do are amazing.
Did you see John Mayer with the dead? The almost dead?
I saw John Mayer every night, of course. No, I went to see when U2 was doing that residency and they were playing Achtung Baby.
Was that good?
Yeah, they were kind of...
I've never heard it.
You've never heard the record Achtung Baby?
No, it's fine.
They were kind of scaling back the show. Like occasionally it would be some big... You're at the IMAX Laser Dome. Things are going crazy. But then they would do like a bunch of just songs straight. Like I think they did not want to be the backing band for a light show.
What? Really?
Yeah. I mean, they would use the background, but really not, you know, it would just be like colors would be fading in and out.
I thought the whole point of it was to have it be like, I mean, the song Until the End of the World necessitates that the whole thing be like vibrating you until you explode out of overwhelming.
I was surprised they picked their spots. I kind of thought every song was going to one up the one after it with the amazing light show.
But then sometimes it was just a screensaver, like just some flying toasters.
I saw some band actually do a show in front of a screensaver, like the one where the thing bounces around the screen and. Uh-huh. Michael Scott is waiting for it to go into the corner.
Uh-huh.
Who was this? I think it was Wallows.
Was it a gag or that was like really what they were...
That was what they had decided to do. And they had chosen a loop where it would occasionally go into the corner. And every time it went to the corner, the crowd would just erupt, even if they were in the middle of a song or in the middle of stage patter. It turned out to be not a good idea.
Don't make your background joke like
more interesting than your band. But I think that's what U2 was thinking about. They didn't want the light show. So there would be songs that would be full on phantasmagoria. And then there would be songs that would just be them kind of playing it straight.
Yeah.
So it actually made the effects more memorable. But the thing I remember is the acoustics were just incredible inside a perfect sphere.
But wasn't the zoo tour all about overwhelming media?
Yeah.
Couldn't they have gone back and gotten all that dumb stuff and then repurposed it for the sphere?
Maybe they remember how much people didn't like that era.
Nobody liked it. No. But I'm mad that they didn't like...
They didn't come out of a giant lemon.
Yeah, they didn't double down on their dumb idea from 30 years ago.
It's crazy. Ads are going to take over, thought Bono. Man, what a prophet that guy was. Capitalism's crazy, said Bono. Anyway, the new owners, start to invite people there to experience sounds. And that is what attracts three women, the Carl sisters, three sisters from apparently a respectable upper class family. You look at their background and one of them is a cardiac researcher in the Hamptons. And one of them is a marketing manager in Marin County. Like they all come from these Tony Coastal enclaves.
Weird that
wealthy white women
wealthy white women would be attracted to something dumb and weird.
Well, you look at the pictures of them and they're these very stylish women, but they are kind of wearing the flowing white caftans that convey both wealth and woo.
Yeah, wealth and woo.
The Real Housewives of Sedona.
It's funny that woo culture isn't more adopted by women of color from the inner city. It does seem to predominantly come from Santa Barbara.
I don't know. I bet there's different manifestations. People of all classes and groups should write in about what their beliefs are about crystals.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
You don't believe it's going to be equally spread, and maybe that's true.
I feel like there's a lot of Catholicism out there for people that want it without needing to go to a special retreat.
There are many Americans that still have religion.
That's right.
It's the ones who were born into a class where that's not an option anymore. That they have to wear the crystals.
Oh, so what you're talking about is sound bath.
Yes. They go out to the Integratron and they realize that they can just play any kind of sound background and it's amazing. Oh, it doesn't matter whether it's ZZ Top or That's good. It could be until the end of the world. But like they're playing dolphins, they're playing shamanic chanting. Let's hear you do this one. This is going to be in trouble. John's canceled. We did it.
Hey, I'm channeling Ramtha, my old friend. I am here to tell you secrets.
And they realize just whatever they play sounds better in a big, round, wooden, white space.
Why does that have to be white, Ken?
Well, the outside's white. It's not Caucasian. It's just.
Is it not, though?
I bet many days it's pretty Caucasian. That's going to be my guess about the visitorship. And in the year 2000, they actually buy the place, which is really in disrepair.
They did.
They loved it so much. They just come out there every year.
The sisters.
They're Integratron groupies.
Can I guess what their hairstyles are?
Did you look at a picture already?
No, but I have a sense of like the kind of bobs they might have.
If you Google Carl Sisters with a K, you can see their... I'm getting a lot of this from a New York Times profile of them by Jody Rosen, which was very helpful. But they have the kind of short Karen adjacent. They are the Real Housewives of Sedona.
I mean, it's amazing that three sisters would get along so well.
Two of them moved to the site. One of them stays in Pennsylvania. Two of them moved to the site to clean it up, clear it up, clear out everything, start planting eucalyptus and stuff. So it's now surrounded by a lovely little garden instead of like just this scary, what's the place? The Slabs?
The Slab is kind of over the hill, but like Pappy and Harriet's Pioneer Town isn't far away.
But it was slabby there. Like people would come and paint graffiti on all the weird shaped rocks and pitch tents and live there for a month.
It's close to the Marine Corps base. It's not, even as you drive through there now, it's nothing about it that feels like, Joshua Tree feels very spiritual, weirdly.
But you think the Integratron is not well located for the...
It's kind of down out of the... It's not near the park. It's down in the flats. It's kind of like off the road, sort of. It didn't feel to me like where you would build a thing to communicate with Venusians, but...
Well, I've read all their materials, and that was where the geomagnetic vortex was.
Oh, see, I didn't see the vortices.
You didn't see a single vortice.
That's the problem with me. I can't see them, apparently, according to Frank Acciani.
They start doing the Carls start doing continuing the sonic healing that the Cannings were doing there, and that's now what it is. Like they would just the Carl sisters say they would just go there and just get blasted by sound till they were catatonic. Like they found that it did something, you know, meditative and transcendental to their brains.
I'm into that,
and that's still what it's for today. For depending on the treatment, for between $20 and $80, you book a session at the Integratron. You go lie out there with some of your girlfriends, and there's a sound bath. They have those singing bowls,
yep,
resonant things that you can kind of stroke and get them to buzz or strike and get them to chime. And the Carl sisters will play you a singing bowl symphony, and the sound will kind of buzz around you. And I guess you and I need to try this because I'm told it's transporting. Even the skeptical Times reporter says that the sounds start coming from places they're clearly not. It kind of the soundscape of the room changes in your head, and that actually kind of changes how you perceive the space itself. She seems to be tripping as much as you can in a travel piece in the Times.
I as an adult with attention deficit disorder,
that's my problem.
Have hyperactivity at all, as you can tell, as any listener would know.
But you get bored easily. That's what happens to me in these experiences.
I don't have the attention to really do anything. I'm surprised that we've been doing this show for 7 years because I just forget about it every week.
Has this episode been 7 years long? It does seem like it.
Yeah. But there are all these Instagram accounts that are like, oh, if you have ADHD, then here's 7 hacks that won't work. And here's another thing, you know, here's a way to forgive yourself. But one of the things is they have this, like, listen to this tone. And then they play a tone that's like, ooh. And honestly, my brain just completely shuts off.
Wait.
Everything.
The tone worked.
All of the like, that's going on in my head all the time. It's just, there's no room for it. It just goes, ooh. And I'll sit and listen to this. Ooh. And I mean, I can't do it all day, but it, and there's all this la 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 about, oh, it's the frequency that turns off the electromagnetic burp-a-derp. But it has given me the sense, I mean, I don't listen to static to go to sleep.
I do. I'm a white noise guy.
You do? You white noise it?
Yeah. And you do start to hear shapes and sounds in the white noise.
Oh, you can hear like people talking?
They're telling me to burn things. No, but you just, as you turn your head, the what you can
kill the neighbors.
No,
Ken.
It just starts going, and then you turn your head another way and it's like,
oh,
you realize that waves are weird.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Well, but anyway, so it's made me now more curious about like sound bowl woo tones, just because
you need a sonic bath.
This is such a weird sound, and it's not, I wouldn't even describe it as like, oh, that's a really pleasant tone. It just does, it appears to do something where I don't have, it's not like I have intrusive thoughts. I just have a noisy little crowd of people that are constantly kind of arguing about something. Oh, you know, like rhubarb. It's like the crowd in the back of a 1930s movie.
Until the tone starts.
Until the tone.
The tone, capital T.
Maybe it is a venereal tone.
I hope it's not a venereal tone. The Integratron was publicized by Huell Hauser. Our Southern California listeners will know all about local TV legend Huell Hauser, who would go to all these California oddities. He was kind of an ambassador for them.
Oh.
The late Huell Hauser is like unknown outside of California. And there he's like Michael Jordan. He's like the biggest celebrity. And after that, there was a steady stream of visitors to the Integratron. Nowadays, you know, it might be, it might just be wine moms, or it might be a bunch of kind of ragtag weirdos who show up on a bus, but it also might be Robert Downey Jr. Or it might be the members of, a band who have come all the way from the UK and taken a day off from their tour to do this.
But it is just like sound bath now. It's not ayahuasca ceremony. It's not...
It's certainly mystical. I mean, the tone you're describing reminds me that one of the Carl sisters said she just couldn't do it long enough. She was like, I would become the governess of Catatonia.
That's
Have you ever wanted a governess of Catatonia to come discipline you?
I've been waiting for her my whole life. So
people come do there to have not just a therapeutic experience, but you know, I've seen pictures of a little shrine in the place where there's crystals, but also pictures of Jesus and Buddha and Sanskrit characters. And, you know, so there are people coming there from a broad spectrum of traditions, maybe mostly self-created.
Uh-huh.
And so whether you're there because you're a believer in science who wants to study the acoustic properties, or because you think this will resonate with one of your chakras, the Integratron welcomes all. And the Carl sisters just call themselves stewards. And they're still waiting for it to do its thing. You know, this was not a tourist attraction. This is not the Corn Palace or whatever. Like, this was a device to produce anti-gravity, physical rejuvenation, and time travel. And they think that's still going to happen. They think, they say that, you know, maybe the time warp will begin, or some visitor will come and tell them how to unleash its potential. They are waiting.
Let's do the time warp again.
Do you think that's what it will be if you play that song in the Integratron?
You know, maybe this is one of those things where the plans, maybe the last page of the plans was lost or something.
He put like one board in backwards.
Well, it just feels like maybe it's, what was that movie with Jodie Foster and Matthew McConaughey where she was
Contact.
Maybe it's a thing where they bolted something to the floor that they shouldn't have done.
They said not to, the alien said not to put in a chair.
Don't put in a chair.
What if the Venusian was like, please don't have middle-aged women with singing bowls?
Yeah, like whatever you do, no bowls.
And Van Tassel forgot to write that part down.
Or maybe what they want is like 10 of them to be built around the world. Maybe you can't just do it with one. Maybe there needs to be one in Seattle and one in Moscow. And, you know, like...
Well, the diameter is 55 feet. You could build an Integratron out back, right?
Actually, can you imagine?
What would the neighbors say?
The final revenge against my neighbors. Oh, hey, ding dong. By the way, I'm building an Integratron.
I looked at the code. There's nothing prohibiting Integratrons.
And it's going to be right here. You're going to see it out of your window. and all of the people that come to visit it.
If there's more than one, are they integritra? What's the plural of integritra?
Integritra.
Multiple integritra will spring
you'd
up.
You'd have to pronounce it integritra.
Integritra.
We're not good at this. And that concludes the Integratron. Entry 650.SS1, no, .SS0117. Certificate number 13181 in the omnibus. Futurelings, social media is bad. Someone wrote me today and said, you've been saying social media is bad for 10 years, but you're still on social media. And I said, I know.
It's like smoking. Kids, don't start smoking.
It's bad. Hey, kids, don't start smoking. Anyway, it is bad. Because I am still on it doesn't mean it's not bad. It's worse that I'm on it. I mean, it's worse because I'm on it.
Well, it's certainly worse for you. It's a lot worse for you, marginally worse for others.
Yeah. How do you feel about, do you think you make social media better? Do you think you are just equalizing social media, or do you think you make it worse?
I'm just part of the noise. Like, the bowl starts resonating, and I buzz along with it.
What's the best thing about social media, do you think?
There is some sense of, it's in the name. There is some sense that you are part of a social peer group and everybody's riffing and having a good time.
Does that still exist though?
Yeah, a little bit on Blue Sky, little bit. Not on Twitter for sure.
No. I mean, even on Blue Sky, I sure see a lot of people yelling. That doesn't feel like, you know, you and I, how many times have we yelled at each other in the 15 years we've been friends?
In person?
At all.
Zero?
Right. So why would I go anywhere where people were yelling?
Just strangers are yelling at me, and so I have to yell at them.
Hey, Ken, I say on the internet, and somebody that neither of us knows is like, that's not, you shouldn't. It's like, what? Nobody yells at me in person.
I like when people try to maintain that. Like, people try to maintain that etiquette. There's somebody on Blue Sky who always says, when they get a weird reply, they always post it and they say, don't come up to me on the bus or in the supermarket and say this, you know? And and if you do it on social media, you're just as crazy. And that is correct. That is the right take. You should treat everybody on there as if you're actually
talking to them.
Yeah, talking to them at a party.
I say that to my daughter at least once a day where I'm like, well, now you're talking to me like I'm on the internet, but we're actually in person. But if you do insist on being on the internet instead of going to kenjennings.com, which I assume you own.
Once again, only with the hyphen.
Oh, ken-jennings.com? So because sad. The real Ken Jennings is an insurance adjuster in Des Moines.
Car dealer in Florida?
Car dealer in Florida.
Former unsuccessful candidate for Secretary of State of Florida, I want to say.
We should go down there and
rough him up?
Yeah, just like baseball bat to the ankle and say, listen, buddy.
He's probably got like a Mar-a-Lago membership now. He's untouchable.
Well, I do own johnroderick.com, so go wander around in there. There's a lot of hasn't been updated since 2011 content there, but I'm going to start doing stuff over there, Ken.
Are you?
Yeah, I'm going to turn the internet back around. I'm going to stop being part of this dumb Bezos-controlled internet, and instead I'm going to go back to the message boards of 2003, and if you want to see something, you need to go to the website of the thing you're going to see.
I'm going to get back on Usenet.
What are you going to do? You're just going to share, like the plans for the boats you're building?
ASCII art about the X-Files. That's the last thing I did on Usenet. I assume it hasn't changed much in the past 30 years.
I bet that would be a huge hit, actually. You can find at Ken Jennings, at John Rotter, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You can email us at theomnibusproject@gmail.com, and that's real old school technology. When was the first email sent?
The first email?
Yeah. 1940. It was part of
Oppenheimer sent it.
Yeah, he Project was like, Blue Book.
I am become death.
I am become death.
Oppenheimer, he, him.
I suggest you email us. We love your emails. We treasure them. We talk about them even if we don't talk about them publicly. You can hang out with Futurelings on Facebook or Reddit or wherever you're currently hanging out. They're aren't any Futurelings hanging out on the johnroderick.com message board?
But now there will be.
But there might sure be soon. What was the latest thing? Oh, yes. Like a a fan and sort of Twitter friend of Roderick on the Line got mentioned on one of our shows the other day, and she texted me today and said, my DMs are now blowing up with a bunch of guys that look like they're here for a Toad the Wet Sprocket reunion. And I'm like, you know what? That's the kind of humor that's going to kill.
You're welcome. Yeah, I could. I guess I keep putting off fixing my own blog, but I don't really want to.
When did you blog last?
Well, it's been defunct for better part of a decade, I want to say. Yeah,
right. But I bet it's still up, right?
Yeah, I think maybe the parts of it have crashed, but I don't want to fix it. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's in ruins like the Integratron. We need the Carl sisters to come fix up my website.
Carl sisters.
Come paint my website white.
You can mail us actual things, and this is actually really part of one of our, that's our favorite thing of the day, is when we open the mail that you send to P.O. Box 55744, Shoreline, Washington, 98155. One of the things we got in the mail was that map of Puget Sound in Russian that is now being bent by the fact that I left it under your computer, which I shouldn't have done. Sorry about that.
Well, I put my computer on top of it.
Yeah, but it was the inbox. Thing. I have no idea why it gave you an inbox.
It's great. What if you started putting assignments for me in my inbox?
I found this wood inbox, and I'm like, Ken needs this.
Every day there's a stack of reports for me to go through. Work's piling up at John's.
That's right. Somebody halfway through the show, like a woman in a pencil skirt, comes by and puts a bunch of files in it. Takes your stuff off the other side.
I have theater tickets tonight.
But the most important thing I'd like to mention to everyone is the Patreon site for Omnibus at patreon.com/omnibusproject. It's probably the best thing on the internet. It's a combination of the message boards from Ken's and my blogs. It's got ASCII art. It's got...
I wish it had ASCII art.
It has a whole
If you send us ASCII art, we will post it on the Patreon for sure.
It's got a dictionary of all of the terms that Ken and I have made up over the last 7 years. But what it really has is dozens upon dozens of special episodes of Omnibus where we describe, where we respond to letters, sometimes congratulatory, sometimes angry, but most of the time just informative letters from listeners. And it's got art and photos and all kinds of great stuff. So for a low, low price of whatever you can afford, go to Omnibus or go to patreon.com/omnibusproject.
Pennies a day, I think, will get you access to the Addenda show.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess any amount of money is pennies a day.
Yeah, 500 pennies a day.
No, it's 500 pennies a month. So what is that? 500 divided by 30. It's like 20 pennies a day.
20 pennies a day.
Dimes, mere dimes a day.
Less than a quarter a day? What? That seems too cheap.
18 pennies a day. Let's call it that. Listeners, from our vintage point,
in your vantage.
It is kind of a vintage point, because we're in the distant past. We have no idea how long our civilization survived. We hope and pray that the catastrophe we fear may never come. If the worst comes soon, though, this recording, like all our recordings, may be our final word. We probably should have done fewer UFO shows, in that case, if the world really does end. We gave the mistaken impression that UFOs were very important in our era, when in fact they were really important in the late 40s.
Yeah, they were very important then.
And the most important thing.
No one now really cares about them because there's a lot else going on. Somebody's do.
I mean, that's why you don't think about Harry Truman anymore, because he was overshadowed by all the flying saucers of his time. Mm-hmm. But if providence allows, we hope to be back with you soon for another entry in the Omnibus.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.